Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, February 18th, 2025. I am very, very happy to be with you today. It is a cold day here in Denver. It's 17 degrees right now, up from, I think it was 4 when we woke up this morning, Grace and I, which of course eliminated a walk because it had also snowed. And it's still snowing, and it's really interesting. It's like a very casual snow that's falling, just very peaceful. It's been falling since, well, probably before the sun came up this morning, but there's just not much accumulation. It's just really, really peaceful, and it feels good. It feels really good, and I just want to thank you again for listening today, and my voice will get better as I talk. So, sorry, I just still get that little catch every now and then. A million times better than it was. But so anyway, thank you again for listening today. If you can, please join us in the chat room. Just go to 12radio.com and click chat. Feel free to comment or ask questions about the teaching segment, and I will answer them after the show. If you would like a reading from me or a healing, you can find me every day on 12listen.com. I'm available usually mid to later morning Pacific time into the evening. And if you stop by and don't see me, or if I happen to be busy on another call, put in a callback request or schedule a call. I'm notified immediately, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. And I will always do my best to meet your schedule. And just a reminder, these are my usual weekly reminders. We do have reduced rates a few times a week on 12listen, typically Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. And of course, for any holidays or, you know, new moon, full moon, 1-2 day, those special days, we are always on special pricing, which means reduced rates on calls and chats. If you want to find out about, or want to be informed, I should say, of our specials, just go to 12listen.com and sign up for 12 promotions. And really all that means is you leave your email address, and then you'll know. I still have and will have through the end of February my Available for Love 15-minute time-based session up through this month. And it's just, in a nutshell, all of life is relationship, and relationships are tricky. They just are, which is why all of life is relationship. You know, we're here to grow, we're here to evolve. And the biggest way that we grow and evolve is through our relationships. So, you know, whether it's friends, family, pets, a romantic partner, or even your home, even where you live or your work, you know, your workspace, it's all relationship. So, you know, it's very, very important to release old energy that is not in present time, in order to be available for new experiences. And that's for all new experiences, but especially where relationships are concerned, because I really think we carry extra baggage when it comes to relationships. So, you know, we all have filters through which we see the world, and those filters are based on past experience, not truth. So being able to offload some of that baggage, just get rid of it, make space in your space, and really does bring you present for something new and different, you know, wonderful experiences in whatever way they show up. But in this session, we will heal and clear past relationship energy and fear so that you're really available for love in all the ways, any of the ways that it can show up. So it's a really positive and powerful session. And I'm super excited. I mentioned it last week, but my You Empowered Intuitive Feng Shui classes are up on 12 Academy. This is a series of 4 classes. It begins on Thursday, March 20th, the first day of spring, at 5 p.m. Pacific time. You know, Feng Shui, I learned intuitive Feng Shui in 2002. And it was just It just lit me up. I mean, it was the most exciting thing that I'd ever learned, and fun. And I've, I'm a watercolor artist, and I love to paint walls. I love to paint. I had my own painting business for a while, and I just love that. That's when I am just in my bliss. And when I'm painting walls and then the final result, and I think part of that is because you see a result. You paint a wall, you see a result immediately. And so that's very gratifying. But, and I think that's why feng shui, intuitive feng shui, and again, I am not a master. This feng shui is like, I would call it a science. And there are people who study for years and are very, very adept and have a wealth of knowledge. That's not me. I'm an intuitive. I know when you have something in your house that's blocking your energy and you move it, you feel it, which is why I love this practice. And, it is very positive and it's very powerful. But again, you are the instrument in that. There are rules and things that you follow, but when you follow them, you create a shift. And then they become the reminder of what that shift is. Do you know what I'm saying? I used to do, I when I would do house healings, I would go through and clear the energy and ground it and just watch energy release energy and send energy through the walls, through all of the structure, and then fill it with the vibrations that were positive and powerful for the person that I was clearing the house for. But then what I would do is I would go through and do feng shui cures and enhancements, because again, they were reminders of the work that we did. That you can walk out the door and walk back in after a house healing and it feels completely different. So that's the feeling you want to hold on to. And when you see, when you see a crystal, spinning and reflecting light in the entryway, it reminds you of that and it brings you back to that positive focus. That's what I love most about it. Plus, it is just so much fun to do. It's just so much fun to do. I mean, I painted my whole house in 2002. I painted my whole house, each area with the colors of, the color, the specific colors for each area, for each of the eight areas of the Bagua, nine areas, actually. There are nine. Ba means eight, but there are nine because health is right in the center. But the purpose, the intention behind feng shui is that your home is a metaphor for your life. And qi or light or source is life energy. So simply put, the objective of the practice of feng shui is to have qi flow unimpeded through your home, energizing the various aspects of your life. So, and those aspects are career, fame and reputation, health, helpful people, travel, wealth, knowledge, prosperity, relationship, and family. So, and that's just brief. But my main objective in these classes, as I've probably already stated, is to take the mystery out of the practice of feng shui by looking at the basics from a Western metaphysical point of view as an intuitive and as an energy mover. So for the people, the students that took my previous You Empowered series, those 10 classes in the fall, this is just an easy, not just easy, but a great next step to those. So, this practice of intuitive feng shui is simple, very common sense, very intuitive, and a lot of fun. So, when our homes, the energy in our environment should support us. And that's the whole point, right? It's the square of life. The square of life, according to the old truth teachers, is wholeness, which is health, abundance, right relationship, and true place fulfillment or success. Feeling fulfilled in your work, in your home, in everything. So, feng shui is, it's just a way to enhance that, you know, to focus on that. It's all roads lead to Rome, you know, they all do. So what I teach in these classes is how easy it is to empower your life through the intentional placement of objects in your environment. And in the series of classes, we'll cover class one is the basics, the nine life areas, where they're located, the colors, elements, shapes associated with each area, or gua. Ba gua means eight areas, but there are actually nine. As I said, health is right in the middle. And then we'll talk about the creative and destructive cycles, cures and enhancements, and more. Second class, class two, we'll focus on the prosperity areas of the Bagua. And there are many areas that contribute to prosperity. And they all work together. You know, they flow together. They work together. They enhance each other. And we'll cover each one and talk about cures and enhancements to get the most out of them. The class three is the relationship areas of the Bagua. And as I said a minute ago, all of life is relationship. And that really is what feng shui is, relationship. And there are many, many kinds of relationships. And there are many areas of the Bagua that support us in creating healthy, supportive relationships. So, and then class four will focus more on health and fame and reputation. And then, just because those two kind of, health is very, very important. Because whatever if you've got a situation that you don't feel you can handle adequately in one of the other areas, you can take it to health and work it there. And fame and reputation goes far beyond fame and reputation. So they just deserve a little more time. And then also in that last class is just answers questions about specific concerns that the students might have. So, you know, I'm so excited to teach them. It's been a while. So I'm jazzed. I'm just jazzed. There is no prerequisite for these classes. They are standalones and they will be listed on 1-2 Academy until they're taught. They will all be recorded. So if the time of the class doesn't work for you, register anyway and you'll get the recording. So again, I'm very excited to teach them, as you could probably tell. And as always, I want to remind you of the gratitude board on 1-2listen.com. Post what you're grateful for. The advisors at 1-2listen moderate that board 24/7. We will add our intention and attention to yours. You can post anonymously, so why not? Why not? Take advantage. And also, I always want to thank you for listening to 1-2 Radio, however and whenever you do. There is programming on 1-2 Radio 24/7, and there are archives of all of the shows from all of the hosts in the on-demand section at 1-2radio.com. You can download them anytime you want. 1-2 Radio is a great source of inspiration, information, and support. And I just offer that, you know, if you have some time and you want to download something, download it from somebody you might not listen to regularly. Check it out. You know, check somebody else out. You might just find a new spark. You know, we're all different voices, all different passions. And again, we're here to support you. That's what we're here doing on 1-2 Radio. So please, please take advantage. And now I just want to say thanks to Serena for producing the show today and taking care of us on 1-2 Radio. And let's move into the teaching segment by listening to a song called Down Tempo Glide by David and Steve Gordon. This is from the Nirvana Groove CD and Sequoia Records. So enjoy it for a few minutes. I'll be right back. I can't wait to talk to you during the teaching segment. Thank you for being here. I'm Kelly Whetstone. You are listening to Empowerment. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that music. It's a good little, Sharina was saying she thought it was very peaceful, and I think it's just a nice groove. It's a good shift, a good segue into the teaching segment, letting go of the other stuff. So, excuse me. I wanted to share just a little bit about my experience with jury duty. But then when I started going back through it in my head, it actually turned into the whole teaching segment. And I'm really excited about it because there were just, it was a gold mine. You know, it really was just a gold mine. And I'll explain why. Hopefully by the end of the teaching segment, you'll understand why I feel that way. I honestly had a great experience. A great experience, because I went with the intention of being the observer, no matter what happened, no matter what happened, whether I was called for a jury, to be a juror, or whether they just sent me home because they got enough jurors and let the rest of the people go that showed up. But my intention was just to maintain a grounded, neutral space, you know, to be that graceful presence. And that's what I focused on. And it was very, very interesting. So you had to be there 30 minutes early. That's the instructions, because you go through security. And there really weren't all that many people there. It was really surprising. You know, everyone, if you've never been to jury duty, and if you have, you'll know what I'm talking about. Everyone that shows up for jury duty checks in and then goes into this big room and sits and waits. And I remember being in that room, and my memory of it was that it was absolutely packed. It wasn't the case this day at all. And, you know, I think being called on a Thursday as opposed to a Monday or Tuesday made a big difference in the number of people. But I found an aisle seat and read a book until the action started. And pretty soon, I got there at 7:30, so we sat there until a little after 8:30, and then a woman from one of the courtrooms came to get the first group of potential jurors. And they called off 21 numbers. Mine was the 21st number. I don't know why, that kind of makes me giggle. But we all went into a courtroom in numerical order, you know, then up from 1 to 21. So I was the last one in. And the first 12 sat in the jury box, and then there were 9 of us that sat on a very hard wooden bench. The jurors had comfy chairs, or the people in the jury box, they weren't jurors yet. But we sat on a bench that had just a straight back and no fluff. So that was kind of interesting. And out of 21, only 6 would end up being on the jury. So it was a gleaning out process. When everyone was seated, the judge, who I absolutely loved, she was just wonderful, wonderful. And the epitome of patience, explained the case. She explained what the case was. She said, there's only one witness, and this trial should be over today. Unless if the jury goes into deliberation, they can't come up with a verdict and they need to come back tomorrow. So that was good news right off the bat anyway, because I've been there. The juries that I've served on went on for days and, you know, just having to go back at weird times. And it's not like you go for a day and it depends, you know. So that was kind of a relief just knowing that. Well, after she explained the case, she gave us the instructions. She swore us in, and then she gave us the instructions, which were very simple. Basically, the defendant was innocent until proven guilty, and it was totally the DA's burden to bring adequate evidence to prove guilt, and that the evidence would be the only consideration for the verdict, and that the defendant was not required, according to the Fifth Amendment, to speak on their own behalf. And in fact, even their attorneys did not have to speak on the behalf of the defendant. Those were the basic rules. Very black and white. Very black and white. So next, they did the what's called the voir dire, which is like the interview with the potential jurors, the 12 that were seated in the jury box. They were given a list of questions about themselves that they had to answer. And it was really interesting because the last time I was on jury duty was either 2017 or 18. And that was not the case before. They didn't, you know, I think they knew from the questionnaires that we filled out and turned in when we got there that were part of the summons. I think that's where they figured out who we were, you know, and what we did, because you fill that in. Well, now it's, we want to get to know you. So it was, you know, what's your name? What do you do? What's your education? Are you married? What did your parents do? How long have you been in Colorado? There were probably, I don't know, 10 questions at least. And what do you do for fun? What do you like to, what kind of music do you like to listen to? What kind of TV shows do you watch? So that was interesting. So you got to hear these 12 people, you know, go through and answer those questions. And then they were interviewed by the DA and the defense attorney. And it was interesting because it was interesting to listen to the way the attorneys posed their questions to potential jurors. It was very, very interesting because they didn't just ask questions, but they used scenarios and stories to elicit responses from potential jurors. And the responses were even more interesting than the questions. And the judge repeated more than once throughout this period, which took a little over 2 hours total. And the judge repeated the very black and white instructions several times during the selection process. So in observing the whole thing, it seemed to me that many people, and maybe all of us, and I can't say all of us, but I think a great number of us, just as people, are very uncomfortable with simple instructions. I mean, those instructions are black and white. That's really all you had to know. Can you do that or can you not? You know, can you be an impartial, can you act with impartiality and fairness? That's it. So it was interesting to watch human nature, because that's really what I was watching. You know, they wanted a background story, a history, so to speak, or they wanted to know what else was going on at the time. Or, you know, they knew someone who had been affected by a similar situation and were unsure that they would be able to be fair and impartial. And that's fine. That is fine. Everyone got to talk for as long as they wanted to talk. They were encouraged to be honest. They were thanked for their honesty, because the attorneys and the judge wanted a fair and impartial jury. So they gave plenty of time to anyone who had questions or expressed bias or even a slight hesitation. I mean, even a slight hesitation in answering a question, it was like they'd circle back around, and they kept circling through the jurors, potential jurors, asking the same questions in different ways. Again, the goal being a fair jury that they all agreed to, attorneys and judge. The attorneys and the judge discussed the responses, and they dismissed, I think, 4 or 5 people that were replaced by the first 4 or 5 of us, you know, that were sitting out there as alternates if we were needed. And then, you know, and then one of them was dismissed, and And actually, at the end, it ended up that there were only four of us out of 21 people who didn't end up in that jury box answering questions, but were just dismissed, along with the extra people after they had chosen the six jurors. They kept 12 up there at all times, at all times. So the judge said something very, very profound when people were going, well, you know, we just, you know, I just would feel better if I knew this, if you could tell us this. And she said, everyone has a history. And of course, you bring that with you when you come to for jury duty. But can you leave that out of the deliberation room and make a decision based solely on the evidence presented and the instruction of the law? And I just found that brilliant, because that's exactly what I've been, what's been in the center of my head, what I've talked about on my shows, what I've written about in the Power Peak, about our filters, you know, our filters, our influences. You know, it's court aside, court jury duty aside, when do we ever meet someone and not have at least an opinion of them? You know, just from what we see, you know, based on our filters or influences, you know, our perceptions, which are our filters, influences, our beliefs, which are not true, you know, which are not true. It's just those are the things that we've carried with us all our lives from the time we were babies. So, you know, but the question is, can we ever leave them out? Can we ever just, number one, be aware of them and leave, push them aside and just have an experience of another person, of meeting another person? You know, I know we can. I know we can, because they're just, they're part of us. They're what, as Joel said, that's what makes us, that's what make us up as human beings, makes us, makes, that's what, that's what constitute us as human beings, are those filters, those early influences. And again, just to go over, their prenatal influences, early environment, education, and later life experience. So all of those things, there are associative mind. Those are what come flooding in whenever we're encountering anything, you know, anything, a person, a new experience. They all come to the forefront, and none of them are in present time. You know, there's something that happened, their history. And anyway, so I know we can get past those. I know it's possible, let me put it that. I know it is possible. It just takes, number one, awareness that that's what's happening. You know, oh, wait a minute, where did I get that opinion? Why did that come into my head? You know, just being the observer. And that's really what this is all about, is being the observer, the neutral observer of just your own experiences, your own life, your own reactions. You know, if you kind of keep that observer in it, you know, in that observer mode, using neutrality, being grounded, then you have that kind of to step back into, so to speak. But as I said, I know we can do that, because it just takes awareness, number one, that it's happening, that, oh, geez, you know, I'm doing it again. And the realization that what we are meeting is not the person, but their state of consciousness. And states of consciousness change constantly for everyone. We change them like we change our clothes. You know, we're zooming along just great. Something happens, boom. You know, we take a nosedive, or we take something personally, or whatever. And what started out to be a great day, you run into the grocery store, you come out, somebody was doing something that affected you, and now you're not in a great space. So that's a state of consciousness. That's not you. That's your state of consciousness. So I think that the whole purpose for me to even be there in jury duty, to be called, because it started when I got the summons, and then I just neutralized it and became neutral to it and decided I was going to go and just be, you know, what did I have to offer? Well, I have neutrality to offer. I have a grounded presence to offer. And that's what I wanted to be, regardless of what happened, whether I was called, not called, that didn't matter. That was my purpose, to be the neutral observer. And so, you know, after, you know, listening to the questions and answers and just observing this, you know, the question for myself was, could I be neutral? Could I just be neutral? And this wasn't where the defendant was concerned, but it was where everyone else in the courtroom was concerned. As I listened to everything that was said during the selection process that lasted over 2 hours, as I sat on an uncomfortable wooden bench. So there were obstacles, right? That was my challenge. And you know what? It was possible. And even when I found myself doing an inner eye roll, I could bring myself back around and get neutral again. Because it was truly fascinating to observe the things that people got stuck on. And I could watch it, just like energetically, I could watch it. Something came up. You know, they get stuck on a point, and kind of they shifted, you know, and appeared to just kind of disregard everything beyond that point, you know. And that's what we do. That's what we do. Oh wait, well this is cool. Oh, I don't like that. Well, the cool stuff just fell off the cliff. I don't like that, And it's just, again, it's human nature. You get stuck on something and whatever else is said, whatever good thing, you know, what might come up after that, we miss it because we are distracted and focused on the thing that we got stuck on. And I'm using my experience at jury duty just to illustrate my point, but I know we all do it. And again, it's a product of our influences, our judgments of what is good and what is bad. That's what our influences are. So I saw it happen several times. And this was really cool. It was like watching a movie. From to really be in that space of the observer was really, I don't know, I just felt very solid, you know? But I saw this happen. I saw people get stuck, and then what happened after, but the one that really sticks, no pun intended, in my mind, happened at the very beginning, after the judge explained the case. Well, it took several years from the time of the incident to the trial date, and one of the potential jurors could not get past that, just couldn't get past that. He wanted to know why it took so long. Well, the judge explained that what happened during that time had nothing to do with the duty of the jurors that day, you know, and it had nothing to do with it, nothing. Again, you know, based on the evidence, the defendant is innocent until proven guilty, and the burden of proof is on the DA, and you have to look at that evidence and make up your mind beyond a reasonable doubt. That's it. So he was finally excused. Actually, he went up to fill in a slot. He was in our group when one of the other jurors were excused. And he was asked by one of the attorneys if he would find the defendant not guilty because of the delay, regardless of the evidence. And he said he probably would. So he was excused. But it was just interesting to watch that. Very, very interesting to watch that. Another sticking point for several of the people up there was the fact that the defendant didn't have to offer up a defense. They were going to hear from the prosecution. So why wouldn't they hear from the defendant as well? And in that is like, there goes fairness and impartiality. If the defendant is not going to speak on their own behalf, they must be guilty. I mean, it was really, really interesting. So, you know, forget that they don't have to, according to the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. It's just, it's so interesting. And it was just a whole lesson. It was all a lesson for me on how our filters take over, you know, how that information just takes over. You know, we all get stuck on things. We just do. And we want to know why something happened or why it is happening now. And those are unproductive questions, because even if we find out the thing happened or is still happening, even if we find out why, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything. And searching for why can take us on a wild goose chase, especially when we're looking at, and this has nothing to do with court, but just what we do, I think, as humans, you know, for when we're searching for why something happened, as I said, it doesn't change it, but it just takes us down the rabbit hole. It takes us out of the present moment, takes us out of being productive. It's a major distraction, and it can just really bring up a lot of judgment and blame and regret and guilt and, you know, depending on what that thing was that happened. And none of those are true either. You know, they're not true either. They're not in present time. Whatever happened in the past is dead, gone, and over. As are, you know, the people involved in it in the past. You know, who we were then. You know, we're not the same person that woke up this morning in this moment. We're not. We're constantly moving, constantly evolving, constantly learning, constantly growing. So, you know, it's just, we can get so stuck on those unproductive questions. And like I said, even if we find out, it doesn't change a thing. It doesn't change a thing. Why doesn't matter. What matters is how we meet it now, in the present moment. If it's something that's happening now, how do we meet it now? How do we use our infinite self to meet what's happening in the moment? You know, how do we get out of the way and allow that to happen? You know, I like that, the idea of being the observer, just observing, just always kind of hanging back a little bit, seeing what something is, and seeing it from that place of black and white, you know, just black and white. This is a thing that's happening. It has no power in and of itself. The only thing that gives it power is my perception of what it can do to me. So, you know, when we perceive it, again, going back to good or bad, positive or negative, then when we believe something has a negative effect on us, it will prove us right. It will prove us right because we believe that, and we can only live what we believe. But taking a step back, especially right when something hits you, like, wow, that hit me wrong. Wow, I don't think that's right. Wait a minute. Let me get out of that. Let me get out of that smallness, that small space in my head, and just be neutral. You know, neutrality is the biggest power tool ever. Neutrality is a healer. And if you vibrate at neutrality, if you vibrate at being the observer, you know, the neutral observer, you know, it's a vibration, right? And vibrations go outward, and they affect everyone that you encounter. What you vibrate at, you attract, because like attracts like. And it is a relative universe, a relative incarnation, a relative earth school. So back to productive or unproductive questions, Michael Tamura wrote, when you ask a question, the asking of it puts your attention on the elements comprising the question. At the same time, it takes your awareness away from what is not being asked. When you ask, I have to have a sip of tea, sorry. I apologize. So I'm going to go back. When you ask a question, the asking of it puts your attention on the elements comprising the question. At the same time, it takes your awareness away from what is not being asked. When you ask, why am I feeling so horrible? Your attention goes directly to the horribleness you're feeling and eliminates your awareness of all the beautiful and wonderful experiences of life that are also in you. The why, quote unquote, why in the question seeks out reasons for the horribleness of your feelings that pile up inside of you, which intensifies those horrible feelings while shutting out your attention from all the great things you could be feeling in its place. My teacher was a master of asking productive questions. Instead of seeing a difficult situation or an adversary as a problem, he would ask quality questions such as, what can I learn from this experience? How can I use this situation to teach my students what they need to progress? What can I do to turn this conflict into a resolution? In a sense, he was always asking a variation of the question, how can I seize this opportunity for the good of all concerned? Love provides all the opportunities of life, and love shows us how to make use of them as well. But love also always honors free will. So, unless you invite her in with welcoming questions, she remains silent. Ever faithfully yours in the wings. Isn't that brilliant? Isn't that brilliant? That's Michael J. Tamura. He was a professor at Berkeley Institute. I don't know, he may still be. And his book, the book that that's from is You Are the Answer. It's a fantastic book. But that was just, that just kind of makes your head, makes my head explode. It's beautiful. You know, there's always more than one way to think about something. Always more than one way to experience something. And it really is just a matter of stepping back, taking yourself out of what you're thinking or experiencing, and shifting gears. We all have the power to do that. We can. It's a choice. It's a choice. That's what the neutral observer does for you. It's part of you. It is the mind not influenced by the assumptions of good and bad. That's what the neutral observer is. And therefore, it can see the spiritual basis in everything, the truth, which we can't see when we're in our heads and in our influences and in our strictly our humanhood. Dr. Irvin Seal wrote about what he called the bystanding mind. He wrote, the undeveloped ego feels naked, just as its first parents did in Eden, and strives for a sense of self-importance. When we are not self-conscious, capital S, conscious, we are self-conscious, little s. All the egotistical thrusting forward of the self for position, fame, and honor are meager confessions that I am not all here. This observation brings us back to our interrupted theme of how we humans generally take ourselves much too seriously, having our focus on the outside rather than on the inside. Great souls, however, will observe that in not taking your human self too seriously, you are taking your divine self more seriously. You are considering your spiritual prerogatives and qualities and options and capacities more. And in doing so, you are getting outside your personal self and viewing it more objectively. And that means less emotionally, which means less vulnerably. For we hurt only when we are identified with littleness, and we are immune to the degree that we are identified with largeness. Correlating to this, taking oneself seriously, is the bad habit of taking things too personally. Many are always reacting emotionally or taking personally events and situations which are wholly impersonal. Any change in situation is resented as a personal affront. Such people are over-involved. They are too attached, and their feelings have become the prisoners of events. They've not yet learned to stand outside the situation and look at it as a beholder only, and not from the angle of a pea in the soup. And that's Irvin Seal from his book, Take Off From Within. Just such powerful and brilliant things. How, you know, not taking things personally is incredibly hard to do because, again, we all have filters. We all have a history, right? But nothing is personal. Everyone that says anything to you, is showing you who they are, their state of consciousness. They can call you names and point their finger at you. It has nothing to do with you. Nothing. It has to do with their filters, their perceptions. That's it. So there really is nothing personal. There really isn't. And if we can understand that, we're just a lot better off. I mean, we really, truly are just a lot better off. But I want to just end, because my voice is just about ready to give out here, with just something to ponder. I want to leave you with something to ponder. Not that there hasn't been a lot to ponder. I was listening to a series of lectures by Alan Watts, and he said something that just is still kind of moving around in my head, you know, in my consciousness. He said, "You will struggle and struggle as long as you think you're missing something." That's powerful. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Kelly Whetstone. You've been listening to Empowerment here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way that you listen to the world. Please stay tuned for Katie Weaver, followed by Christina LaFrance, and have a very, very blessed week. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.